Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at canva.com. Design for work. Just go to Canva, C-A-N-V-A.com. Yay, you know what that means, everyone. It's been a while since you've heard it, but after 3 long years, we're finally going to return to the live stage, ending with Sketchfest in San Francisco on February 3rd. Mm-hmm. And then on February 1st and 2nd, we haven't quite nailed it down, but it's going to be Seattle and Portland.
Yeah.
Not sure of the order, but we were going to be putting all this information out on our social media channels, right?
Yep. And on Friday, October 7th, tickets will be on sale for all 3 shows, and you can watch our social media handles for information and ticket links. How about that?
That sounds great. Can't wait to be back on stage. We really, really missed it.
Yep, and we'll see you guys in February.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
And welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here too, providing us with last minute facts and informations and tidbits. And that makes this a banger of an episode of Stuff You Should Know.
It's a banger.
Is that how they say it, the Brits?
Yeah.
Is that your British accent? Was that your John Cleese?
By way of Chicago. Can I make a quick announcement?
Oh, goodness. Sure.
It just occurred to me that I'm clean to announce this now that I go into the recording studio in my basement, which is now full of my wife Emily's business.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because you've known this for a while, and yeah. Jerry too, but Emily shut down her business, everybody.
Yeah.
And rather than me trying to stumble through her thought process, here she is now. she has her full statement on her website. Loveyourmama.com and all the hand-wringing that went into it. And she had a 20-year run. It was a great thing. And she's going to keep her website going, though, because she's gonna still do, she said she's going to make things from things she can grow.
Oh, nice.
So the business itself is a, hey, I got to dominate the world because I'm ambitious type of thing.
Yeah, I'm an independent woman of the 90s.
That has gone away, but she's going to still do probably some face sprays and things like that. Anything she can grow from her own herb garden.
Right.
On a very small level, very limited things.
Nice. That's how you get the big bucks. She's got it figured out.
Yeah.
Those limited editions.
She's not retiring anything, but just big thanks to she got a lot of support from the Stuff You Should Know Army over the years, both emotionally and by buying things every time we mentioned her. So it really meant a lot to her, and she wanted me to pass that along.
That was very nice, and congratulations to Emily on a 20-year run. That is rather respectable for a small business.
I think so, and we're all proud of her, and now the walls are closing in here in the basement.
Right.
So, because she couldn't get rid of everything. We have 2 storage spaces, and now our basement. So she'll be working on that, getting rid of that stuff for a while as well.
I'll bet it smells amazing, at least.
It smells better than it ever has down here.
You know what I'll bet it smells better than, Chuck?
A dirty old license plate.
That's right. Especially one that says Sportsman's Paradise from Louisiana that they got out of the stomach of a shark in Jaws.
Right. Or Ass Man from New York City.
Hey, it's the Ass Man. You got that straight. So, by the way, since you brought up Seinfeld, I went back and started watching Larry Sanders' show on HBO.
Great.
maybe the greatest, actually. Like on rewatching, I'm like, this is even better than it was years ago. And yeah. I've come to believe that Jerry Seinfeld is a twee impression of Gary Shandling. That Gary Shandling is the legit OG, and Seinfeld is just a aberration of him.
I think Seinfeld would certainly own up to being influenced by Gary Shandling.
He'd probably really punch me in the stomach for calling him twee, though.
No, he would just say, who are you again?
That's right. Yeah, and I'd just go home devastated.
No, great show, but I think ahead of its time as well. Larry Sanders?
Yeah, absolutely ahead of its time for sure. It's definitely worth watching. If you have HBO Max, it's all over it, and just go watch it and thank me later, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and sorry, let me give it one more kudo. Mm-hmm. All respect to 30 Rock, but Larry Sanders is easily the best sort of behind the scenes mm-hmm. of a TV show, movie, set type of thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, even better than The Player, because it was way funnier.
Well, yeah, The Player was great in its own way, though.
Yeah, but it's no Larry Sanders show.
Correct.
So one more thing while we're shouting out TV shows. I also saw, both of them are on Netflix, and they're both horror TV shows, and they are awesome. One is like straight-ahead, scare-you-to-death horror, Japanese mm-hmm. horror. It's Ju-on: The Origins. So, you know, the Grudge?
Yeah.
So it was Ju-on in Japan. And this TV show, it's like an 8-part series, I think, maybe 6. It's like the origins that lead up to Ju-on, like The Grudge. It's amazingly well done. It's perfectly tailored to fit it, just precisely. It's so well done. And then the other one is called Marianne, and it's a French language witch story set in today's time, but it deals with like a 16th century witch, I think. And it's not quite as straight ahead scary, but it's really, really good. Nonetheless, it's very engrossing.
You guys watch a lot of horror.
Yeah. Yeah. Yumi has to just by proxy. But yes, I watch a lot of horror.
I don't get to because Emily's not into it. But we've been loving The Bear. And of course, I shout it out a lot. But another shout out to Reservation Dogs.
BJ and The Bear?
No, The Bear.
Chuck,
you haven't seen that?
No, I haven't. Is the oh wait,
it's good.
Wait a minute. Is that
about the Chicago restaurant?
I tried and I was like,
it's very stressful.
No, it wasn't even that. It was very boring. Oh, okay. I thought.
Oh, that's interesting because it's like the most adrenaline fueled show on TV.
I know, it's really weird, but I was like, I could not be more bored than I am right now. But I get what you're saying. It was a weird juxtaposition because I know I was supposed to be like feeling intense, and I was just like, this is. I don't like it. So, not to yuck anybody's yum.
You'd also done some heroin.
Say what?
You'd also done some heroin. That probably.
That's true. I couldn't stay awake. No, I definitely did not do any heroin. It was just that show was extremely boring to me. But
all right.
Again, well. I mean, if you like it, that's great. I'm not trying to tell you not to. I'm just, that was my take on it. So, I'm glad we ate up some time because, Chuck, this was my pick, License Plates. And it turns out it's a little more boring than I had anticipated. Like something
this... I like this stuff.
I do too. I do too. And there's some interesting stuff in there. But something this sweeping, a global worldwide phenomenon that's been mm-hmm. around for over 100 years, you would think there'd be a little more like crazy stuff, you know, associated with it. And there's just not. I mean, Ed helped us out with this. And he did, God bless him, his best work trying to find anything to make this interesting. And he finally did, you know. And we found some other stuff too. But it's just not as engrossing as I thought. It's kind of like The Bear.
That Grudge show, that is so funny, too. I was watching that the other day. It's hysterical. Yeah. I disagree. I think you're selling this short. I thought this was really interesting, considering it's a show about letters and numbers on a piece of metal on the back of a car.
Okay, point made. And also, I should say, this was also a listener request. AJ and Tracy in Pittsburgh-ish, Tracy said, they requested this one not too long ago, a few weeks ago. And man, that's the kind of turnaround time we have here at Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, and we know it's them because their license plate says PTSBRGISH.
That's pretty great.
Great new show.
You just did that off the cuff too, man. I'm impressed.
Well, there's too many characters in there, but. Everyone gets a joke.
Okay. So what country do you think invented the license plate, Chuck?
Had to be the United States with industry and automobiles.
You would think so, but no. As a matter of fact, the French had us beat by a good decade, a full decade. Not that kind of rough decade where it could be anywhere from like 6 to 8 years. A 10-year stretch. There was actually one guy who kind of originated them. He was the prefect of the Paris police force. His name was Louis Lepine. And in 1893, he said, hey, we're starting to get more cars on the road, and I think we need to kind of regulate them a little better than we are, which is to say we're not doing that at all.
Yeah. So they came up with all kinds of stuff, plates, driver's tests, driver ID, speed limits, stuff like that. And the U.S., as we do, looked to the French for all things. And in, I believe, New York was the first U.S. state to require a law. And this was in 1901, April 25, that basically said, all right, here's the deal. You need to put your initials on your car somewhere. They need to be 3 inches tall, but otherwise, go wild. It's up to you how you want to do this. If you want to make them out of little Garfields that no one will understand for many years, you do that. And the New Yorkers did it. And I think that this sort of customization allowed for some kind of creative New Yorkers to do different things, everything from like wood to leather, and I'm sure all kinds of crazy fonts.
Sure, definitely. Like a lot of people just went to the hardware store and bought house numbers. Some people just painted them directly on their cars. And like the one thing I saw is this is so early, there's so few cars on the road that this was not like a revenue generating move. They were actually using it like you had to put your own initials on the car so that if you terrorized a horse or drove up on the sidewalk or did donuts in the middle of Times Square, they would know who did that. And that's the kind of like usage that cars were getting. There were a lot of like jerks driving cars initially. And that was a way to kind of rein their behavior in.
Yeah. And then the 10-year mark, like you talked about in 1903, is basically at the point when they said, all right, we got to start issuing these things because this initial, we didn't really think out this initial plan. Because people have the same initials, there's a lot more cars, and we can't go around just looking for every, you know, GRL in New York to find out who was terrorizing the horse.
Yeah. Gary Regis Larson.
Well, it depends on if you're doing a monogram.
Okay, so it could be Gary Larson Regis. I could have been correct.
What's the deal with that? Well, we should do a short stuff on monograms.
Oh,
well, why do they
great
do that?
Idea, buddy. Great idea. So 1903, that was kind of like a watershed year for license plates in the United States. And also I'm sad to realize that it was a rough decade from 1893 to 1901. It wasn't a full decade. But 1903, that's why I thought it was a full decade, because it was just such a huge year where all these other states said, yeah, we're going to get on board. First, it was Philadelphia, not a state, but it's in Pennsylvania, kind of near Pittsburgh-ish, if you think about it. And they were the first city to issue official license plates. Cleveland was technically the first city in the whole country, even before New York, to require license plates, but they didn't issue them. Philadelphia was the first city to actually issue them in the U.S.
Right. And apparently Pennsylvania likes to say they, you know, that makes them the first state to do so. Technically correct, but the state of Massachusetts was the first state to do a statewide program.
Ding.
And not just the city of Philadelphia. So, and this is kind of the cool thing, and put a pin in this as for collectibles later on, but Massachusetts did the thing that a lot of other states did, was they started at one. And they just started working their way up. And apparently the Highway Commission member named Frederick Tudor got license plate number one. And that they still, his ancestors years later, still have that number.
Yeah, and Frederick Tudor ties in with our Transcendentalist episode because his father was the ice king, the guy who harvested ice on Walden Pond while Thoreau was there and shipped it all over the world. So
very cool.
Strange, surprising tie-in, Chuck.
Should we go over what we like to call our bulleted list?
I love them. They're so great. It's just packed with information, no frills, you know?
Man, I used to do a lot of those on the old How Stuff Works articles. I think Katie, my editor, always used to make fun of me because I used to do bulleted lists so much.
They get the point across, and like you can absorb them so easily. I love bulleted lists, buddy.
You didn't do them a lot, though. You were into the prose.
Yeah, I like to hear myself talk, but I respect a bulleted list.
It is funny, personality-wise. I'm definitely a bullet list personality guy.
I made this bulleted list. It's in my personality as well. I actually took paragraphs and broke them into bullets.
Know.
So I'm bullet too, okay? I can hang out with the bullet people too.
Did you do the bullets as little movie slates, or was that some accident on my end?
That was an accident on your end, but a happy accident,
so
it sounds like.
Yeah, when I printed this out, instead of little round bullets, they're little, you know, movie clappers, movie slates.
I don't know how I did that, but I'll try to recreate it.
I didn't know it was even possible. Anyway, what do we got here first? Hit the first one.
Oh, okay. So the first slogan on a license plate was Idaho Potatoes, which is pretty cool. I mean, that would hang around for a while. But they actually embossed a brown potato that took up most of the license plate, and it looked a lot like poop. And it didn't stick around very long. I think that was just a one-year thing.
Something that has stuck around is the longest slogan streak in the United States, and it's one of my favorite license plates because of this. It started in 1936 in the great state of Maine, Vacation Land. Also the title of our friend John Hodgman's book, one of them.
And it's been on Maine's license plate since 1936, every year since then. That's quite a streak. That's far and away the longest streak. I think the next longest is like 1947, and I can't remember which slogan it is.
I just love that slogan. It just sounds so welcoming. Vacation Land.
Yeah, and the fact that it's like one word, too, it's just pretty. They like nailed it right on the head right out of the gate, basically.
Absolutely. What else? Florida had a grapefruit, used to have a grapefruit on their plates starting in 1935, but it just took a year because it looked like the sort of the cartoon bombs, the little black circle with the fuse coming out of it, and looks very much like a grapefruit now that you think of it.
Yeah, and that license plate became known as the bomb license plate, so that was long before the bomb meant something good, and they just they took it out of circulation. And actually, there's something that that wasn't an error, like that was intentional, but they didn't mean for it to look like a bomb. There was a straight up controversial error that happened in 2021 in Ohio, where they issued the brand new license plate, this beautiful license plate, and there was a banner being pulled by the Wright brothers airplane. But after they announced it, and it printed 30,000 of these things already, some people pointed out on the internet, I think on Twitter, that they had the airplane backwards on the license plate.
Who can tell? It looks like a box kite.
It does, and it looks like the way that they had it originally. You can understand how they got it like that, but they just didn't check their work. And then North Carolina, you know, North Carolina and Ohio have been going back and forth about which place actually was the birthplace of aviation. They went on Twitter and they said, y'all, leave Ohio alone. They wouldn't know because they weren't there.
Oh,
yeah, it was pretty good burn, actually. But that was very recent controversy. One of the most interesting things about license plates.
The first vanity plates, 1931. Great state of Pennsylvania once again.
Yeah. What else?
I think in 57, they standardized the size nationwide, which is 6 by 12, unless you were riding a motor scooter or a motorbike. And those are the cutest plates of all. I love those things.
Yeah, and those aren't standardized, apparently. They're just supposed to be smaller, I guess.
Yeah, like something that doesn't look dumb on the back of a motorcycle.
Right, not oversized. You know, you want it to be proportionate. And then 1971 was a big year, too, because that was when 3M started supplying reflective sheeting to license plates. Like, in leading up to that time, at night, you were pretty much SOL. But now, you could shine some headlights on these newfangled license plates, and they would just glow right back at you, and you could see who was driving recklessly in front of you, right? And that actually is going to be kind of controversial, as we'll see in the coming years, starting after 1971. But I say we take a break, and we'll get back to all that right after it. How about that?
That sounds great.
Well, now, when you're on the road, driving in your truck, why not learn a thing or two from Josh and Chuck? It's stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
All right.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. So, Chuck, if you look at all of the license plates in the United States, the fonts that are actually like the string of numbers, or if it's vanity plate, like the actual like word or abbreviation, whatever, those look remarkably similar across the United States, but they're not quite the same. I saw somewhere that there's like four different characterizations or four different types, and they're characterized by just little changes, like the edges are squared or rounded, that kind of thing.
Right.
But they're remarkably similar. And supposedly, there's the reason for that is there's one company in the U.S. that supplied all of the dyes for that embossing for many, many years.
Yes, the John R. Wald Company. And Ed points out that he got a lot of his information from a few different websites of license plate collectors. And, you know, usually we pride ourselves on like super legit sources. And it's not to say these aren't, but for an episode like this, you know, this is about as legit as you can get. But he does point out that these collectors are really, really serious people about their collecting. So it's probably more verifiable than just about anything that we ever look up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I agree, because there is a lot, there's a real dearth of information out there. There's like a list of 10 interesting facts about license plates, and they're copied and pasted everywhere all over the internet, basically. But Ed did turn up something really interesting about European plates, right?
Yeah, and sort of to back up this story, we should talk briefly about its predecessor in Chicago. When they started making plates in Chicago early on, they realized pretty quickly that people could fake their license tags.
Yeah.
So they started making they started issuing numbers to people, like just the metal numbers they had to mount on their own,
right?
Because they were making these metal numbers, basically in a way that was unique enough to where they were like you couldn't pick it up at your local hardware store,
right?
So you could spot the fakes. And this came back later in Europe in the 1970s in Germany, when a left-wing radical group called the Red Army Faction was doing car bombings and kidnappings and bank robberies and all kinds of bad things. And they were using fake, you know, they were faking their license plates, those cool, cool European license plates that are shorter and longer and just as James Bondy as you can imagine.
Yeah, because when they flip up, there's a machine gun behind them.
Or an oil slick.
Sure.
It's funny because I think a lot of Americans think European plates look super cool. And I've talked to some Europeans that think American plates look cool with the graphics and stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just a grass is greener thing, but I think those European plates are awesome.
I'm all about the American plates, I have to admit.
Okay. So anyway, they were faking these license plates, getting away with it, and they realized that the font that they were using, DIN 1451, was really uniform, and it was, you know, I mean, like a lot of fonts, if you take the leg off of an R, you've got a P,
right?
But this was sort of that to the extreme, where it was really easy just to sort of remove certain strokes to come up with other letters and still have the plate look believable.
Yeah, you could just put like black or white electrical tape over it. And the problem was Germany did use that same font, DIN 1451, throughout the entire country. And so the Red Army faction had the whole country so nervous and scared that the government was like, we need to come up with a new font for our license plates. And they set a calligrapher and design professor named Carl George, one word, Hofer. And he created something called F.E. Schrift, an entirely new font from scratch in just a few months in the, I think, the summer of 1978. And you took German in high school.
You going to say the word?
So now no, say the I'm word? Not. Even practicing, I was like, I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast.
I had to, yeah, it's tough. I had to break it down. And even with my German experience, I mean, it is a long word. I didn't count the letters, but it looks like the German alphabet, basically. Well, it looks like the American alphabet.
Have at it, buddy.
So I'm going to say it's Fälschungser Schwerunde. Oh, jeez.
Wow, that was close.
I had
close.
It so good.
That was close.
Fälschungser Schwerunde Schrift.
Very nice. Yeah, that's it.
I think that's right.
And the first word before Schrift, that was all one word, isn't it? It's quite a word.
It's a long word.
And it means, from what I understand in German, either fraud preventing or falsification hindering. And then Schrift means font. So it's a falsification-hindering font. And the way that Carl George Hofer came up with this font, or the way that he made it difficult to forge, is he added what are known as serifs, or serifs. I think it's serif, right?
And it's serif.
I had never known what a serif was until
really?
I started researching this episode. Yeah, I never
are
knew.
Are you kidding me?
No, so a serif, for those of you who are like me, like how I used to be, it was so recent, I can remember, I can really identify with you guys. But a serif is like a little extra flourish on a letter that gives it a little extra pop, a little oomph. So if you draw a letter I and then you make crossbars at the top and bottom, those crossbars are technically serifs, right?
Yeah, and just let me explain. The reason I was shocked was because of your past history in publishing and newspaper things, and as a writer, and serifs and sans serifs is just something I would have thought you would have known by now.
Never bothered to go figure it out. I walked around knowing I did not know what a serif was, or that serif was even necessarily a thing. I did know
you're
that
a sans serif guy, though.
Serif,
right?
And is I think it's sans serif, and this is why, Chuck, because sans in French means without. So I
you
think it's serif.
That?
I knew that sans meant without.
Oh, okay.
I just never put the two together. This is all very embarrassing all of a sudden. I thought admitting this would just kind of make the episode move along more smoothly, but
I'm calling
in
so
its
much
tracks. There's a spotlight on me. I'm sweating quite a bit, and I'm really very uncomfortable. And we took an ab break too recently ago to just go to it.
Right. I'm really sorry. This all surprises me because you're a very much a sans serif guy. Aren't you sort of Calibri or like what's your font that you use?
Calibri is my font. Calibri on 10 point.
See, I'm Times New Roman 14 point all the way, as you know.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at serifs all day long, all the time.
What's funny is Calibri 10 point is way more bullet listy than Times New Roman on 14. So it's funny we kind of cross over to one another's side in different places.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever you do live shows, I'd like your tiny little font. I just, who reads 10-point font? That's so tiny.
I know,
you say paper, which is great.
Yours is so big, the front row can follow along with the episode because they can see it so clearly.
We should settle at 12, which is, I think, the standard, right?
Yeah, it's still too big for me.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I'm challenging my eyes.
All right. Sorry to tease you about the serif stuff.
Okay. I forgive you.
But the point is, he added these serifs basically here and there to make it to where it was really hard to replicate.
Yeah. And again, he basically churned this out in a few months because Germany was in like this emergency state because the Red Army faction was terrorizing literally the country. And then by the time it was ready for production, I guess the Red Army faction had been largely broken up and they just shelved F.E. Schrift until I think the mid-90s for almost 15 or so years.
That's crazy.
It just went away. But luckily, they already kind of had it. So when the European Union started to try to standardize license plates across the whole EU, Germany stepped up and said, hey, we've got this really great font called F.E. Schrift. What do you guys think about this one? And they were like, what's the F.E. stand for? And Germany said, don't ask.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 22 letters long. You don't want to know.
I mean, it looks Icelandic almost.
Yeah. So now we come to the very scintillating part of the episode where we talk about tag fees. There are not standardized tag fees across the country because states handle this. It's not federalized.
Right.
At least not yet. And Ed used New York as an example because Ed lives in New York. But most states are about the same in that you can usually pay a little bit of extra money anywhere from, well, $10 is the low, which is Virginia, which we'll get to that in a second.
Right.
All the way up to like 60, 75 even. I think Washington, D.C. is about the most expensive at $100, or at least it was recently, to get a specialty plate.
Wow. Which one do you know?
Which plate?
Yeah, which specialty plate is $100 in D.C.? Is it the taxation without representation one?
Well, I think that actually may be for vanity, which, you know, we should point out those are two different things.
Yeah.
A specialty plate can be, you know, support the ASPCA or support veterans or, hey, I'm a teacher or I'm a firefighter or this is an antique car. Like any of those sort of standard things you can pay extra for. But then you can also obviously get to your vanity plate, which you're going to pay even more on top of that.
So I was looking up cool specialty plates around the country, and there are some neat ones. I found, I think, a Popular Mechanics slideshow.
Ooh.
Montana has this really cool one. It's just black and white, mostly black field with some white here or there, and they have a T-Rex skull on theirs. It's like
cool.
It supports the museums in the state. Florida has a great one. It's got a space shuttle taking off with you know, on the rockets and all the boosters and all that stuff. It's to commemorate the Challenger and Columbia disasters. It's very good looking. And then California has one that supports its museums. And I guess Charles Schulz's estate lent Snoopy out just to help drum up money. So you can get a Snoopy license plate in California.
Yeah, and that's the whole deal, is usually some of this money goes toward these organizations. And not just like in the coffers of the state. Since you brought up California, I can say that we used to love trying to spot, when I lived there, the old blue, for my money, the coolest license plate ever, the blue with yellow letter California license plate from the 70s that you used to see on chips all the time.
Yeah.
And you would occasionally still see those out in LA, and it was always kind of a cool thing.
I think they have that. You can get it. It's a throwback. I saw it as like the 1965 edition. And like, so, you know, there's so many people into like hot rods and stuff out in California. They're like going crazy for that because it makes their car look that much more authentic.
I love it. I would totally get one.
So vanity plates, like you said, they're a different thing. They're going to cost you a lot more depending on where you are. And did you see that HuffPost slideshow that I sent?
Yeah.
Like, I was literally laughing an hour or so after last looking at it. Like, just could not stop laughing. Fun. There was one. Can you guess what my favorite one was?
No.
There was one. I think it was either Minnesota or North Carolina, and it was J is Lord, as in Jesus is Lord, but that took up all of the spaces on the license plate, so it was one word, J-I-S Lord. And like, I could not stop laughing about that yesterday, because I'm sure the guy who got a Jesus is Lord license plate gets so mad when you point out what else it looks like. And if you haven't, just sound it out. J-I-S sure. Lord, all one word.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those are, I think, well-intended that turned out to look like other things, kind of like Ass Man on Seinfeld.
Right.
And that was a very popular one in Florida that was true, at least Snopes said so, that was, and I'm not going to spell this one out, you just got to use your imagination, folks. A-5-5, and then, remember, there's a big orange in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like an O.
Yep.
A-5-5, and then that symbol, and then R-G-Y, which just write it down.
I mean, that had to, like, slip past them. They just, because there wasn't an O in there, they used the orange for the O. Surely the people were just like, they didn't think anything of it, right? It's
very, very creative.
I saw it in, I think, a Medium article. I can't remember who wrote it, but the author was talking about how, like, some DMVs will, like, use Urban Dictionary and, like, scroll the internet and, like, try to figure out what people are saying in these things to decide whether to deny or approve them.
Especially these days.
Yeah.
And actually, we'll get to that in a second on free speech. But with vanity plates, there are certain rules. Obviously, you're not supposed to say naughty, dirty things, even though people try and get by it in creative ways, like we just mentioned.
Even accidentally.
You're not allowed to use like an O, the letter, I'm sorry, like the, in fact, some states don't even use the letter zero or the letter O, because you can intersperse the, or interchange those to make it look like the other to get around the no profanity thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as vanity plates go, and I was shocked at this number or this list of Virginia being number one in vanity plates, but it's by percentage, which makes a lot more sense. Because when I went to California for the first time, when I was, I think, 18, I had never seen so many vanity plates in my life as in L.A. And I was like, this is crazy. And I thought, kind of dumb. But if that's your thing, that's your thing. But Virginia has 16.19% of their plates. And it's because they're cheap there. It's only $10.
Right.
And I think New Hampshire was next, followed by Illinois, Nevada, Montana, and Texas was the lowest at 0.5%. And then Canadians, we don't want to forget about you. Ontario leads the way with 4.59%, followed by Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Yukon. And then the lowest was British Columbia at 0.59%. They don't care.
There's some sociological study just begging to be designed through that, you know? I'm not quite sure what it is, but I can see it in there somewhere. So
yeah, Texas is just like, we don't care. We're from Texas.
Right. So the whole thing with vanity plates and, you know, your ability to say whatever you want and the state being able to deny you from getting a plate that you want brings up in the United States free speech issues, because you are paying for this and you're displaying it on your car. It's like you are saying this. That's automatically protected by the First Amendment. But it's a little fuzzy, Chuck, because the state is issuing this thing that you're saying whatever you want to say on. Yeah. And in some way, you're repping them as well, or they're repped on the license plate. So they may or may not want to be associated with whatever you're saying.
Yeah. And when it's come to the courts, they have generally sided with people. Like Ed gave the example, there was a license plate issued in North Carolina that said white power, W-Y-T-E dash, I guess, P-W-R or P-W-E-R.
P-O-W-R.
Oh, it was the full word?
Yeah.
So, you know, free speech, yeehaw. And courts generally side with, and I think when it becomes dirty words and stuff is they get a little more involved.
Yeah, definitely.
And so you can't do things like that, but I don't know. It's interesting.
So I saw it goes both ways. They don't necessarily, as a rule, you know, side with the individual. Like, there was a woman in, I want to say New Hampshire or Vermont, maybe. And in the 90s, I think she requested SHT-HPNS. The second part is happens. And her whole thing was like, she had it as just a reminder. She went through a really terrible year. And she had it as a reminder that, like, you know, this stuff happens. You just kind of get through it or whatever. And the state was like, no, those first three letters are dirty. And I think the Supreme Court ruled in the state's favor. They're like, yep, that's dirty. You can't have it.
Yeah.
And she was like, this is so, like, think about context and nuance, guys. And they were like, no. And she could not have her SHT-HPNS license plate.
I wonder if anyone has SYSK fan.
Oh, man. That's if they do, I want to hear about it.
Because mine says SYSK host.
Right. And mine says SYSK HST.
Right. And Jerry says miso.
Nice, man.
No, of course, mine doesn't say that. But it's funny. Yeah. I did have... And I think I mentioned this on an episode at some point. One of my pickup truck that I still have has 666
the plate. You got to keep
by
that
accident,
one.
Which I thought was kind of funny.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure they would give you 666 if you wanted it, but it's way funnier when it's accidental. 666 or LSD, those accidental ones are hilarious.
Yeah, it is interesting though, the question of what is allowed, because I could see some. Like religious conservatives saying they don't want someone to be able to say Hail Satan on their plate. Mm. But I mean, surely that's free speech. Like the courts would decide on the favor of the car owner in that case.
I would think so, because it's free speech in that you're just saying what you want to say, but it's also religion. You can certainly make an argument, and I could see the state being like, okay, fine. You know, I think it tends to be, like you said, where it's a foul word, according to the state, and or like a straight up hate speech or a racial slur or something like that. Sadly, in the United States, some people try to get license plates that have racial slurs, and they tend to be like out of hand denied. And I don't really think a court would side with that person.
I now have a new goal in life. I just realized I want to get an old full size Woody station wagon from the 60s or 70s. Mm-hmm. And I want the license plate to say Hail STNWGN.
WGN.
Not Hail Satan, Hail Station Wagon.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
But it looks like Hail Station, Hail Satan.
I'm so bad at that. I would be like, Hail Stan Wang? So
that happened to me in LA a lot. I would be like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
It's like very unclear sometimes.
Yumi's actually really good at it. And she admitted last night that it was because she practiced so much as a kid, because there was a game show on, I think in the 80s, called like Bumper Busters or Bumper Buddies. And
what?
The whole game show is you guessing what a license plate says. I'm not kidding. That was it.
Wow.
I just kept waiting for like the next round to come up. And nope, that was all they did.
That's really funny.
Yeah. And also, while we're on it, Chuck, just real quick, I got to shout out that Medium article that I was talking about. It's The Never-Ending Free Speech Fight Over Vanity License Plates by Zara Stone. It's a good article.
All right. How about we take a break?
Okay.
Well, I'll dream up a couple of more great vanity plates.
Okay.
Even though Hail Station Wagon, I think I just came up with something great.
I think it's wonderful.
And we'll talk about whiskey plates and who makes these things right after this.
Well, now, when you're on the road, driving in your truck, why not learn a thing or two from Josh and Chuck? It's stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
All right.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep. Lift your head up and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right. I mentioned whiskey plates before we took a break, and whiskey plates have nothing to do with whiskey or the whiskey industry. It is because W is whiskey in the NATO alphabet, and they just call them whiskey plates in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But there is an interesting tie in that you get a W at the front of your license plate if you have been, if basically you've had your, is it your license revoked because of a DUI?
Yeah, but they revoke it so hard they take your license plates too.
Right, but they can't take your car because other people in your family might need to drive that car. So what they do is they give you a plate with a W at the beginning that basically tells everybody, hey, I have had my license plate revoked because of drunken driving.
Yeah, and Minnesota is not the only state to do this. Ohio has their own one. And they I guess very unironically use scarlet letters for theirs. No joke.
I have family members with that.
Do you really? No way.
With that plate, yeah.
That's amazing. So apparently judges weren't using them as much as as much as the legislature wanted. So the legislature changed the law saying that judges had to use them for I think starting in the 2010s. So yeah, I guess you're probably seeing a lot more scarlet letters on cars in Ohio these days.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was. And this is, I don't want to be too specific, but when I was in Ohio visiting Emily's family, I remember walking up the driveway to a family function. And I think my father-in-law was like, oh, check it out. Look who's got the scarlet letter.
Uncle Glug Glug.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about it. And but I was confused whether I should or not after that rope injury story that I failed to ask you about. So now I'm like all shaky and nervous all the time.
You're
when
gotcha.
You mention stories, I'm like, should I ask or not?
So another thing that's happened over the years is people have gotten themselves into trouble for being a little too clever for their own good by having a license plate that says no tags or no plates or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because when a cop files a report for a car that doesn't have license plate, this is generally what they would write, no plate or no tags. So it gets filed as, you know, a violator, and then all of a sudden you're getting pulled over. And this is, you know, verifiably happened before. Mm-hmm. There was a case in the late 70s of a guy who got a lot of fines because of stuff that he didn't do, because he was like, hey, I got a no plates vanity plate.
Okay, so I want to defend this guy, Robert Barber. He did have a no plates vanity plate, but it was accidental because he was applying for vanity plates, and you have to put your top three choices. He wanted boating, sailing, and then if these two weren't available, he didn't want a vanity plate, so he unwisely wrote no plates in the third.
It was a mistake.
And the DMV, totally humorless, always looking out for dirty words, just said, great, this guy wants a no plates license plate, let's give it to him.
Yeah, well, of course, what was it, boating and sailing? That's not going to be on there.
I guess he was just rolling the dice.
Jimmy or Christopher Cross owns those in every state.
Yeah, he does, very famously. So also, Chuck, there's a longstanding rumor that I think we should put to rest that prison inmates in the United States make the license plates in this country. True, false?
It's false.
Well, no. I was about to say myth or busted, and I combined false and myth. So I think I just kind of coined a new term. You don't have to say false or myth anymore. You can just say false.
It is true, actually. And I don't think across the board, but a lot of times prison inmates still do make license plates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's part of the sort of little to no wage labor system that the prisons take advantage of in this country.
Yeah, so thanks to the 13th Amendment, you cannot enslave a person unless they're being jailed for a crime. So most license plates, I believe it is most, Chuck, are produced in the United States by slave labor, incarcerated prisoners. And because you can't say, well, I'm going to fire you, and you're not going to get any wages because you're not paying them anyway, they coerce them into working in other ways, like removing their ability to see family, maybe putting them in solitary, basically punishing them if they won't work for free. And that's how the United States gets most of its license plates. And even worse, it's not just the Bureau of Prisons running this. They usually contract with an outside company who uses slave labor legally to produce these license plates, from which they make a profit that they when they give them to the state.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, terrible thing, and it's something that needs to be changed, but that's not on just about anyone's radar, I think, as far as changing laws goes.
Well, it became kind of a joke, like, yeah, you're making license plates, you're going to jail.
Yeah, especially the ones in New Hampshire where the license plates say live free or die.
Well, speaking of that, and we're not going to go over the whole process of how they're made because it's not super interesting, mm-hmm. but I looked and there was a thing on Reddit where a guy went through, I think there was a, or maybe he just did it on its own and made a map of the states that still have embossed plates rather than the just sort of printed on aluminum that we have now in Georgia. Ours are not embossed any longer. Mm-hmm. Even though Jerry Wildus, she's got an embossed plate from like 20 something years ago still.
Back to the podcast.
And hangs on to it. From what I could tell, and I lost count because the picture was really small, mm-hmm. and then other people chimed in after. This was in 2019, then saying like, hey, now Kansas is not embossed anymore. So it looks like it's about roughly half and half of states that are still embossing. And just one little fun note about this, I did not know. We got it, and I know the Vermonters out there are just waiting. I will not forget about you because Vermont is the only state that has debossed license plates.
Oh, nice.
It is not raised lettering. It is depressed.
So depressed in Vermont.
Very, very cool.
So if you want to kind of take a little nostalgic trip, I found out by accident, there's a TitleMax.com post. It's called 50 Years of License Plates in the U.S., and you can see 50 years of license plates state by state. And if you choose, like, the decade you were a kid and just go, you know, scroll down, it's like being back on the road again at age 10 in, like, the back of your parents' car. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when they, as many people do, when they started just including little logos, like the Georgia Peach. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just the straight up letters and numbers. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, wow, is this the future here that we're looking at?
It is. Well, speaking of the future, so they went from embossed or de-embossed to flat printed license plates. Now, apparently, there's some disruptors out of Silicon Valley because that's where they come from. Yeah. And they've come up with digital license plates. And some states are starting to be like, yep, you can do that. So for a fee, I think it's like $14 a month or $250 for 4 years, something like that. This company keeps your plate up to date. You can have it personalized a little bit. And it looks super cool. You know, if you, especially if you have an electric car, you could do worse than putting a digital plate on the back of it. But obviously, not everybody has $250 for 4 years. And I think that's in addition to all of the normal fees that apply for a license plate, too.
That's right. And speaking of fees, that's something that you would not be able to collect. But people get really into collecting license plates.
Definitely.
And there are a couple of different ways. One is a little, well, I'm not going to say that. One is just collecting license plates, mm-hmm. physical license plates, maybe all of them through history in your state, maybe all of them throughout the whole country over the years, or just ones you think are super cool. And, you know, rare ones, like any collectible, are going to go for a lot more money. You can also buy big lots of them on eBay for not much money. But the big money comes in collecting the actual ownership of a tag number. Because if you remember earlier, we mentioned license plates in many states started at one and worked their way up. There's a lot of rich people with way too much money, I guess.
Way too much.
That want to pay a lot of money to have like eight as their license plate. And they will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that.
Yeah, apparently in the states, Delaware is the state that's craziest for this. There's a real secondary market where, yes, people pay six figures for a license plate number. And it's like, you know, when you buy a car, the plate gets transferred to you. So you can continue to keep this plate over and over again. So you're actually buying it from the person. And usually you get the car with it, but you're like, I don't care about the car. I'm just after the plate. But as crazy as Delaware is for their plates, and again, I think $700,000 is the most someone paid for tag number six in Delaware. Pretty crazy. In other countries, especially Dubai, the UAE, Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong, it's just insane the amount of money they spend on that stuff.
I couldn't believe these numbers, but someone in New York apparently paid $20 million for a plate that said New York.
Yeah, the kicker of that one is it came with the 96 Volvo wagon that it was attached to. I'm not kidding.
Oh, was it really a Volvo wagon?
Yeah. Hey, somebody paid $20 million for a Volvo wagon.
And then the one in the Brits, I believe they paid someone in, is it Great Britain? Is it the UK? Is it England?
What am I going to get in trouble for? UK, just say UK.
Paid $20 million for an F1 license plate tag.
Yeah. So if you want to get gagged with a spoon, head on over to Lux Digital with an E after the X and just read about the most expensive car tags ever, because you will find little gems like this. Saeed Abdul Ghaffar Khoury paid $9.5 million for one in Abu Dhabi because, quote, it's the best number. And then the Lux Digital says, quote, by hanging one from his fenders, Khoury boldly let the world know that he was a man of confidence and prestige. Someone actually wrote that down and was dead serious about it.
Wow.
Yeah. It reminds me that I'm number one hat on SNL.
I don't remember that.
Oh, you don't? Like, Will Ferrell's at, like, this black tie dinner, and he's, like, showing up all the other men because he's wearing a mesh-backed I'm number one hat. It's just completely incongruous with everything he's trying to do, but he's, like, showing everybody I'm number one.
So that's pretty,
pretty great. Pretty great stuff.
I guess one final thing, we put a pin in, so we have to take that pin out, or people would say, what about the pin?
Mm-hmm. Good thinking.
As you mentioned, 3M making the reflective plates. Apparently, 3M continually lobbies politicians to pass laws making people get license plates more often than they need to, so they can get bigger government contracts for those reflective plates, reflective backing. And apparently even police departments are like, we don't need new plates this often. This is, shouldn't have to do this.
Yeah, and 3M's like, come on, you're not paying for it. Your residents are. Who cares? It's nothing to your residents. It's millions of dollars to us. Just do it. Like, they lobby for that, which is gross. In addition to using enslaved prison labor to create license plates, they're a lot more tawdry than you'd think at first glance.
Agreed.
So it turned out to be a really great pick. Tracy and AJ, thank you for the suggestion. Chuck, thank you for turning this into an absolutely delightful episode. And thank you for listening. And since I said that, everybody, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this... Oh, this is a good one. This is a little bit on cultural appropriation, because in the mariachi episode, I talked about wanting a charro suit and said I would fear being accused of cultural appropriation. And you said nay to that.
Nay.
Wear it, because people, you know, you're celebrating that culture. And we heard from a lot of people, and I'm going to read a couple of them from our Mexican friends, mm-hmm. who, and I'm not padding the results here, but literally 100% of our Mexican listeners mm-hmm. roundly said, "Do it, dude, we love it," and that would be awesome.
Yeah, Mexican and Mexican American.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Hey guys, as a Mexican myself, I listen to the episodes. About our country, knowing so much on the topic, and you guys are always so spot on, makes me love the podcast even more. With the mariachi episode, I love mariachi music and personally love singing Vicente Fernandez music, and I want to let Chuck know mm-hmm. he should definitely dress at least once in that style. Mm-hmm. Mexican people love when other ethnicities love their culture and style, and I would say in Mexico they would even encourage you to try on a charro suit. Keep doing what you're doing. That's from Joel Hernandez. Mm-hmm. And then we received one from Jamie Covarrubias. Great, great name. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's Jaime.
Okay, right.
Not Jamie. Spelled J-A-I-N.
Right.
Mexican, came to the U.S. when I was 24 years old. Want to congratulate you on the preparation and pronunciation on the mariachi EP. You guys did a great job, especially rolling those R's with your Spanish. Second, Chuck. You should wear a mariachi suit any day and be a champ. I was born and raised in Mexico, and I feel proud when a person likes my culture. It makes me happy that someone's interested in anything regarding the great parts of Mexico, like food, music, and its folklore, and many other good things. I will not call it cultural appropriation, because I feel joy when the world likes even a little bit of what I am and want to keep spreading the beautiful roots from Mexican culture. It actually works both ways, guys, because I live in the North Alabama area. After 7 years, I proudly call myself Southern now.
Hmm.
You can ask any Mexican person if they feel offended if you wear a mariachi suit. I'm confident they will encourage you to keep doing it. And then they, Jaime encouraged us to talk about in the future Mexican trio Romantico mm-hmm. music, which we're going to look into. Mm-hmm. And not to poo-poo on anyone, but no one really scolded me, but the couple of emails that we did get that were like, hey, maybe think twice. We're from Caucasian people mm-hmm. Taking up the fight for our Mexican and Mexican-American friends. So just laying that out there.
Thanks, man. Nicely put. And who was it in addition to Jaime, whose email you read?
That would be Joel Hernandez.
Joel. Jaime and Joel, thank you so much for writing in. Everybody who wrote in, thank you very much, regardless of what your opinion was. We appreciate it, and we're always looking for good emails, regardless of what your opinion is. You can wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, and send it off to stuffpodcasts@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.